everyone. You're listening to Stuttering 101. I am Peter Reitzis, here with my good buddy Eric Jackson.
Hello again.
Hey, Eric. And good friend of the show, Dr. Bob Queasel. Dr. Queasel is a professor of communication sciences and disorders at Western Illinois University and is a board-recognized specialist in fluency disorders. Dr. Queasel serves as an editorial consultant for several professional journals, including the Journal of Fluency Disorders and the American Journal of Speech-Language Pathology.
So, Dr. Queasel, when it comes to successful therapy, how much does increased fluency or a reduction of stuttering symptoms really matter?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question. So let me try to answer that in a couple of ways. Basically, if you think about the disorder of stuttering and the notion of the importance of surface features like the surface disfluency, and then under the surface features like the reactions of the person who stutters, the role the stuttering plays in the person's life, those sorts of things. I think you could probably say that those things differ for different people. Some clients, for example, have fairly good surface fluency, but they're held back by the fear of stuttering. I know when I was a doctoral student, for example, I was involved in a diagnostic session. A woman came to the clinic and she was going through a fluency diagnostic. She sat there and she cried for the whole time, went for probably half a box of tissues because she was so upset about her stuttering and how much it was bothering her and how much of an effect it was having on her life. The thing she was doing to hide her stuttering, she would give people a different name when she would meet them, things like that. But the whole time that she was in there, she never stuttered. We never saw any surface stuttering. It was all so hidden by her that she never let herself show her surface disfluency. And so there are other people who stutter quite a bit on the surface, but they don't seem to be bothered by their stuttering. So if you look at those things and say, well, is it more important that we get the person fluent? Is it more important that we have the person learn how to deal with the effects of stuttering, to not let stuttering hold them back, whatever it might be? Again, I think you have to sort of strike a balance. Certainly, what I always say is the de facto goal of therapy is always going to be better speech fluency. We never say to a client coming to therapy, well, we don't care about fluency. But I think that we can see that for some people who stutter, the idea of being a totally normally fluent speaker is probably not necessarily a reasonable goal. And so for those people, then, we have to not only focus on the idea of fluency, but also what can we do to help the person to have less effortful stuttering, to have a better view of the role stuttering plays in their life, give them ways to manage stuttering better, give them ways to educate listeners, give them ways to put stuttering in the proper context, those sorts of things. And so, again, I think that we have to balance fluency with other things in order to say that we're going to be delivering comprehensive therapy to our clients.
So, Dr. Queasel, what are some of the preferred outcomes of speech therapy?
Well, again, I think when you look at outcomes and preferred outcomes, I know this was an issue that was being dealt with by ASHA Special Interest Division 4 on fluency probably 10-plus years ago now. But the notion is certainly that we certainly want to get clients more fluent. I think that we as I said before, that's the de facto goal of therapy. So certainly the number one goal of therapy is help the person to be as fluent as they're capable of being. But again, having said that, if the person's not able to achieve high levels of fluency, I don't think we need to say, well, that person has failed in therapy or that we have failed as SLPs. I think that there's other things that we can look at also. Again, clients who come to us, for example, who say things like, I can't go to college because I stutter. I can't get a job because I stutter. Even things as simple as I can't order pizza on the telephone, I can't go to a McDonald's drive-thru because I stutter, those sorts of things. I think that if we help our clients to learn that they can do those things, that they can speak in a way that their speech is going to be fluent enough, it's going to be good enough that even if they are somewhat disfluent, they can still get their message across. I think that those are the kinds of outcomes that we want to look at in therapy, beyond simply saying the person is more fluent. So if, for example, an outcome of therapy might be that the person has learned about how they talk, they've learned about how they stutter, they've learned about the things that affect their speech fluency. They've learned techniques to manage their stuttering, even if those techniques don't necessarily always lead to highly fluent speech. They've learned about the notion that speech fluency tends to vary, that there are times when you just are going to have more problems with stuttering. I'm sure you've experienced those times when, for whatever reason, you know, you're trying as hard as you can, you're trying to use all the skills you've learned in therapy, and for some reason your speech is just not fluent. You just can't seem to kick things into gear. And I think that there are times when our clients get mad at themselves. They feel like they're doing something wrong, they're doing something bad, that they're not a good person because they're not able to be fluent. And I think we have to help our clients to understand that that's a natural part of stuttering, is that the behavior tends to vary. And so I think that knowledge is something that we can give our clients. I think we want to make sure that the therapies that we're doing with our clients work for them. So I think that a good outcome of therapy might be, for example, having a client say something like, at the end of therapy, I felt that the time I spent in therapy was worthwhile. The money I spent in therapy was worthwhile. I got out of therapy what I wanted to get out of it. Again, it was time well spent. Those sorts of things. Those are the kind of outcomes. I think that, again, we want to get beyond simply saying the client came out of therapy fluent and therefore it was good therapy, or the client didn't come more fluent, therefore it was bad therapy.
Yeah. So then, what if a person comes to you for therapy and is stuttering quite a bit overtly, and they say that they want to stop stuttering, and that's their goal in the beginning? And like you were saying, the number one goal is to get a person to speak more fluently. And then you spend a couple of weeks or a couple of months with them, and all of a sudden their goals start to change, where they really don't care about stuttering openly, about stuttering overtly anymore, but now they just feel better about talking, and they're fine with therapy, and they leave, and they're happy and content. Would you say that was successful therapy, even though the person walked away and was still stuttering quite a bit?
Oh yeah, because again, I think the thing is, if the client's goals changed, like for example, let's say that we went in there and it was like, we want you to be as fluent as possible, okay? And the client came into therapy, their notion was, well, I have to be fluent, because if I'm not fluent, then I'm not good, I'm not a good person, or whatever it might be. But then we started to work, and we started to talk about things. They started to maybe read things about stuttering, meet other people who stuttered, or whatever it might be. And so they started saying, you know, I never thought about the fact that I don't have to be fluent to be a good person. I don't have to be fluent to be a success. I don't have to be fluent to achieve my life goals or whatever it might be. And then they come to the point where they say, you know, I'm starting to do the things I want to do. I've gotten a different job. I've gone back to school. I've started dating. Whatever it might be, and they say to me, you know, I now am at a point in my life where I don't feel that I need to be coming here for therapy anymore. I don't really need you anymore. As long as I was confident that the person really did believe that. In other words, they weren't just saying to me, oh, I don't want to come and see you anymore. I don't think this is worth my time. Mm-hmm. If they truly believe that they had a change in their view of themselves and their stuttering to where they had put it in the context of, I can stutter and still do the things that I want to do, I don't think I would have any problems telling that person that they could leave therapy. Well, again, with the idea that if they ever wanted to come back again and continue to work on fluency skills, they could certainly come back and work on fluency skills.
So would a professional organization like ASHA, the American Speech and Hearing Association, do you think that they would have a problem with that?
I don't think so. Again, I think if you look at, because basically right now, any sort of fluency-related stuff that's going to come from ASHA is going to probably come out of Special Interest Division 4. Mm. And I think that basically the view that comes out of SID 4 is basically the notion that you don't have to be totally fluent in order to say that therapy has been a success. I know that there are some things where every once in a while you read something from ASHA that tends to suggest otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that most people who understand stuttering understand that there's more to it than simple fluency. And I think one of our goals in SID 4 and just as people who care about stuttering in general has been to sort of help other people to understand, and that includes the people who are in ASHA as well, but helps some people to understand that there is more to it than simple speech fluency, that there's more to the disorder than how fluent a person is. People who want to be educated can figure that out. The problem might be that there are still some people who just don't want to take the time to hear that message, maybe.
So let me play devil's advocate a little bit. The
sure.
Three of us have been quite involved with self-help over the years, and many speech pathologists who are involved in self-help in the stuttering world will say things like, the ultimate goal of therapy is saying what you want to say when you want to say it. What do you think of that compared to the goal of stuttering less or being more fluent?
Yeah. Well, again, I think that the most logical goal of therapy is be able to say what you want to say when you want to say it. I mean, that's what it all boils down to. If the notion is that you have to work like crazy to be fluent, okay, or you have to talk in a way that makes you uncomfortable, or you have to do something to be fluent that just doesn't make any sense, versus getting your message across. I think it's Ed Cantor says, you know, the reason that people talk is to get their message across. You know, you talk to other people because you have something that you want to say, and that's basically it. So the notion is that What we're trying to do as SLPs, we're one of the people who stutter or whoever we're working with, we want the people we work with to be able to say what they want to say to other people in the most effective way possible. And so the goal of after you're done with therapy, you will be able to say what you want to say to other people and not be held back by the fear of stuttering or by the fear of listener reaction or by the fear that you might stutter or whatever it might be. I mean, that makes eminent sense to me. Again, people who don't understand stuttering, who think that, well, how hard is it when you stutter? What's the big deal about stuttering? Whatever, don't understand the whole notion of loss of control and what stuttering really is, and how the whole notion of loss of control, the fear of loss of control, the thing that really motivates people who stutter to do the things that they do. You know, again, those people just don't get it, and those are people that we have to try to educate, help them to understand the nature of the disorder. And again, I try to do my small part, the students I teach, for example, people that I talk to, for example. But I think that certainly that goal you've expressed, the one of being able to say what you want to say when you want to say it, has been expressed by many, many people. And I think if you want to summarize the most reasonable goal of therapy, that's probably it.
Dr. Quisel, on our brother podcast, Stutter Talk, we often joke that we don't ever say the term fluency, that when we say the term fluency, we actually mean a reduction of stuttering behaviors. Where did this term fluency come from, and what do you think about what I just presented to you?
Well, I think that basically the term fluency, at least the way I used it, it simply means the same thing you just said. In other words, when I say fluency, I mean a reduction in stuttering behavior, but it's just a lot easier to say fluency than it is to say a reduction in stuttering.
I think where we're coming from with it is there seems some type of weird cleansing going on in our field where I've been asked to teach fluency classes, right, not stuttering classes. So it's one thing when Bob Quisel says fluency, but there's something wrong, I think, with our field. Can you comment about that?
Well, I mean, again, I don't look at the word fluency as being necessarily a bad word in that way. For example, I changed the title of my graduate class from, used to be called Stuttering and Associated Disorders. I changed it to Fluency and Fluency Disorders because, again, I talk about fluency as a characteristic, if you will, and then fluency disorders that comprise more than just stuttering. You know, there's other types of disorders of fluency as well. I think it's important people realize that stuttering is a special type of fluency disorder. Okay, but again, I don't look at the word fluency as being necessarily a bad word. I mean, I think that when you look at and you say you have to be fluent, or you know that the only good speech is fluent speech, I think then the word becomes a bad word. Okay, what I point out to my students is that fluent speech is not fluent. I mean, people who are allegedly fluent speakers do all kinds of stuff when they're talking that disrupts the forward flow of speech. I mean, people rarely go more than a few words without doing something to interfere with speech. And right, so this whole notion of fluency, again, I don't look at it as being something that's a word that's being used in some sort of a negative way or some kind of a bad way. I think it's more like a simple way of saying, you know, speech is stuttered or it's fluent. It's stuttered or it's not stuttered. It's fluent or it's disfluent. You know, again, I just think that we have to use words to impart things in a certain way, and maybe the words we use are not necessarily the best words. That's why it's important, I think, that when we're using words, we try to make sure that we explain what the word means. So I think the question you asked is a good question, but I think that we can use fluency to suggest a lack of stuttering without somehow saying that fluent speech is good and stuttered speech is bad. Again, it can mean speech with less stuttering as opposed to speech that's totally fluent.
You had said in the first segment we did with you on Dean Williams that we use speech that is meaningful for children. And because I work so much in the schools, I get questions all the time from my colleagues from the schools. And they usually start with, I have a fluency student. I have a fluency client.
Right.
And I say, well, what does that mean? And we'll finally get to, oh, the child stutters. And then I realized pretty quickly that they never use the word stuttering with the child. So really the word fluency, at least in some cases, becomes a euphemism.
Right, right.
And
it becomes
an avoidance word.
Well, but see, some of that may just have to be with this whole era that we're in where you have to be careful the words you use because it's going to hurt somebody's feelings. So you say, well, I have this kid in my class who stutters. And it's like, well, I can't say stutters because that's a bad word, you know, and I'm putting a label on my child, and I can't label children because I think that's more of the era that we're living in, where you can't call somebody a stutterer or you can't call them mentally retarded or whatever it might be because that's a label, and you can't label children because it's a bad thing. And so I think that it's this whole notion of we have to talk around things. Again, it's not just kids who stutter. It's anybody. You know, I have this kid in my class, and he's different. Why are they different? Well, you know, by the time that, you know, the person gets around to explaining what's wrong, oh, you mean he's got cerebral palsy, or he's got autism or whatever. So I don't think it's necessarily a sort of some kind of a conspiracy against stuttering. I think it's the world in which we currently live, where labeling people is just a bad thing.
Yeah, I guess for me, and I promise to be brief about this, but when a person uses the word fluent, I just get the sense that it puts the idea in people's heads that, oh, well, then that's what you're working on in therapy, and that's what a person should work on when they have some sort of problem, you know, fluency, right? Why I kind of asked you that question about the terminology before.
Okay.
Because sometimes I'll hear people say things like, oh, yeah, so I wasn't very fluent today. I need to work a little harder on my fluency. And I'm always like, is that really what you need to work on? You know what I mean? It's like,
Well, and you know, one of my fondest memories of Dean Williams, we were sitting one time in his office reading a draft of my doctoral dissertation, and he said to me, "God damn it, Bob, words have to mean something."
Oh, that's great.
And so that's always one of my favorite quotes, you know, and it's true, because, you know, we start throwing words around and we don't really necessarily use them in the way that we mean for them to be used, you know. And so I think that's one of those cases where probably Dean would be thinking that, you know, God damn it, Peter, words have to mean something.
That's great. And I want to personally apologize to our listeners about this stuttering 101 sort of took off a little bit in the Stutter Talk fashion. Dr. Kreisel has been a wonderful, good sport about it. You've answered all of our questions, and we're going to keep all this in because sometimes things come up and we just really want to talk about it. So thank you, Dr. Kreisel, for joining us at Stuttering 101.
Thank you.